Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. The Oregon Legislature is not currently in session, yet committees are at work preparing the legislative agenda for next year. The Oregon State Senate and House Judiciary Committees held a joint meeting on December 14th. We're going to hear an update from the Law Enforcement Contacts Policy and Data Review Commission. First up, we have Dr. Brian Renauer. He's the director of the Criminal Justice Policy Research Institute at Portland State University.
I provide the lead staffing to the Law Enforcement Contacts Policy and Data Review Committee, the governor-appointed committee, LECC. We're here to give a brief update on our annual report 17 that we completed in July of this year and distributed to the Judiciary Committee. You should have a copy of that. I wanted to begin with just sort of a brief background to the End Profiling Act, which is the primary focus of the annual report of and our activities this past year in 2017. The End Profiling Act established a standardized definition of profiling for law enforcement in Oregon and broaden the scope of profiling to include a variety of marginalized groups. The act requires Oregon law enforcement agencies to have an anti-profiling policy in place and to develop reporting and investigative procedures for individuals coming to their agency who want to file a complaint. And they should have their own complaint form for those public members. The most relevant aspect of the End Profiling Act for the LECC is that it requires all law enforcement agencies to send a copy of any profiling complaints that they have received in the year to the LECC committee and to inform us of the results of the investigation of that complaint. The LECC is also authorized to receive complaints from the public. That's something that we've put in place since the fall of 2015 and help those individuals then connect with the law enforcement agency that needs to investigate that complaint. And finally, in the last legislative session, the End Profiling Act was tweaked a little bit. Some additions there was that the Oregon State Police needed to create a reporting form for law enforcement agencies to send their complaints to the LECC. And they need to do that by January 31st of every year. So prior to that, prior to this fix in the last legislative session, for example, in 2016, we only received profiling complaint reports from 9 law enforcement agencies in the state. And we weren't sure if that meant that there were only 9 complaints statewide and the rest had 0 complaints, or was there some non-compliance with the statute going on. So this was an important fix to the bill in 2017 to have all agencies turn in this Oregon State Police reporting form that even if they had 0 complaints, they had to turn in the form to us. There was a checkbox on the form that says that they're in compliance with the End Profiling Act statute. And then there was an additional form where they would provide a summary of the complaint and the findings of their investigation. So some of the important results in our 2017 annual report regarding profiling complaints. First of all, there's 170 law enforcement agencies These are primarily municipal and state police agencies that we know are have been informed about the reporting requirements of the End Profiling Act. And of those 170 agencies, 129 reported to the LECC, sent us that Oregon State Police reporting form. So in sum, there was 76% compliance with the Profiling Act in 2017. Of those 129 agencies that said in their form, 20 agencies also reported that they had a profiling complaint, and those represented 43 complaints statewide. 41 were reported unfounded. Two complaints were dismissed or rescinded by the complainant, and one was exonerated. So this is really a huge improvement from 2016 in terms of the number of law enforcement agencies that reported to us, 76%. There's still some room for improvements in this effort with the End Profiling Act. Kind of move forward to that. And those are, we need more outreach to district attorney's offices. They are listed on the bill for the End Profiling Act, and we have yet to make strong networks and connections with district attorney offices that have investigative units that might be receiving complaints from the public. Similarly, some tribal police departments have reported to us, others have not, and it's perhaps they're not aware of the bill requirements. OLC is also listed as a law enforcement agency that should be reporting to us, as are rail agencies. We also have yet to receive sort of back complaints. So the original End Profiling Act was created in 2015, and it took a while for the process to get put in place. And just this January, we received the Oregon State Police reporting form, but that leaves 2015 and 2016 complaints sort of unreported to the LECC. So we're going to be working on developing some communication and outreach regarding, can we receive those prior complaints from the start of this End Profiling Act. There's also a need for some clarity and consistency in the Oregon State Police form that was developed, and I'm happy to report we did work with them this fall, and they did create a new form that's going out and has gone out to all law enforcement agencies in regards to that. In particular, we're concerned that very few, only a couple agencies, actually sent the actual copy of the complaint to us, which is part of the statute. So the new form puts in there sort of a reminder that this is part of the statute, says to please turn in a redacted copy of the original complaint. And that would be really helpful to gather information, particularly the narrative of what really happened. So the reporting form that was provided by OSP does have a section for agencies to fill in some narrative about the complaint, but there was great variety in the level of detail that was provided in that. From one or two sentences, individual felt they were profiled, to multiple paragraphs about the incident. And that's why, therefore, having that redacted copy of the complaint would be helpful to help us understand what was the reasoning behind the suspected profiling, why did they believe they were profiled, characteristics of the incident would be quite helpful for us to better understand this phenomenon for the state. So related to that, the new OSP form that's come out has a 250-word minimum limit for them to put more robust narrative of the description of these incidences. We're also still engaged in training. We have two anti-bias training curriculums that we've been implementing since 2008, 2007, which complement the new curriculum in the State Academy. And in 2017, we worked with 19 law enforcement agencies, sent officers through our training for a total of 337 officers that participated in this training. We do have some future goals that I'll quickly talk about here. One of them is that we're launching a new website. Our website has been embedded within the Portland State University website, and we think a standalone separate website would be a better avenue for individuals from the public and also law enforcement agencies to become more aware of us, to report complaints, but also help law enforcement send in their complaints to us, their complaint forms, through that website. We also have new legislation out in which we want to change our name. The Law Enforcement Contacts Policy and Data Review Committee, LECC, really long acronym, and the committee has come up with a new proposed name for this. And again, we think that would help with our name recognition statewide, increase perhaps utilization of our resources. We also want on this page to have information about all law enforcement agencies for the public in terms of their anti-profiling policies in place, but also their complaint forms. And so right now we're doing sort of a little project where we're looking at all the law enforcement agencies across the state, their websites. And when you go to those websites, how easy is it to understand what is the process to file a complaint, and in particular file a profiling complaint. And we want to find that, what are the websites that have that information, then make that available for the public. If they have a profiling complaint form, can we have a copy of it, put it up on this website? So this can be sort of a one-stop shop place where the public can go to learn how to file a complaint if they would wish to.
That was Dr. Brian Renauer, director of the Criminal Justice Policy Research Institute at Portland State University. And now, here's David Vedanke. David is the former executive director of the ACLU of Oregon.
Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Barker. I am members of the committees. David Vedanke, member of the LECC since 2001, when it was first created. And with the current chair of the LECC, then County Commissioner Annabelle Jaramillo, we go back on the racial profiling issue together since the early 1990s. And I want the committees to be aware that in the past, when the LECC was the primary agency to encourage law enforcement to collect stop data and to accept that data for analysis and then work with agencies once that analysis was done, Professor Renauer invented a lot of the standard practices that are now used around the country with help from consultants and members of the committee. I'm including the former chair, former Oregon Supreme Court Chief Justice Ed Peterson. So I want to thank him for that work. That work going forward, of course, will be done by the staff of the Criminal Justice Commission as House Bill 2355 is now being rolled out. So other than that, I don't have anything to add to what you've already heard, but I'll look forward to working with the committees in the next session on our technical fixes for our statute.
That was David Vedanke, a longtime civil liberties advocate and the former executive director of the ACLU of Oregon. Vedanke and Dr. Renauer were both testifying before a joint meeting of the state's Senate and House Judiciary Committees. They were receiving an update from the Law Enforcement Contacts Policy and Data Review Commission. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Now we're going to go a little further back in the year. Back in August, Congressman Earl Blumenauer organized a public community forum on ending the war on drugs. One of the speakers was Portland Police Bureau's Deputy Chief Robert Day. We're going to hear part of what he had to say.
Standpoint, it doesn't make any sense. But then, of course, I'm not landing there in terms of the human cost that occurs and the harm that we know of for people entering and processing through the criminal justice system. Now, I say that, I want to be clear, I'm unapologetically proud to be a police officer, to be a Portland police officer, and to serve in this profession for nearly three decades. And the work that the men and women of the police bureau do, I'm also exceptionally proud of. 2017, we responded to almost 375,000 calls for service. About 45% of those calls would fall in the category of what we're talking about tonight in terms of we call them disorder, so an unwanted person, suspicious behavior, things of that nature. For example, this morning as I was coming to work, We sent two officers to a call downtown here off of Main Street of a man sleeping on the sidewalk, but his feet standing out in the traffic. Or the call yesterday of the man throwing knives at the tree over on the Springwater Corridor by Station 21 underneath the Hawthorne Bridge. What I don't want to understate is that the scope of this challenge is really significant. Our officers are responding to literally thousands and thousands of calls a month around behavior associated with, once again, the discussion we're having. And I'm not embarrassed or afraid to say that's not a police problem. But we are the best social outreach worker going, because 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can call somebody and the police will answer the phone. So we have become that default. And one of my criticisms would be, although I'm absolutely passionate about diversion and I'm absolutely passionate about looking for other options for this specific population we're talking about, is the system has changed behind the police, but hasn't changed on the front end. We still call the police for these problems. And so the police have been given very few options. LEAD is an example of an option. But really, at the end of the day, when it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and we're standing there with the individual who's, for whatever reason, maybe broken out a window or defecated in a doorway of a business, and the business owner is standing there, and we're faced with what are our options, what are our choices, we know that, a 48th arrest is not going to make the difference here. We get it. But it's 2:30 in the morning. There's not a whole lot of people that are picking up the phone to come and intercede and create other options. And one way to resolve that situation, frankly, is to go to jail. And that brings a resolution for the moment and for the time. But it's equally frustrating. This isn't an excuse. I'm not making an excuse. But it's equally frustrating for the police officer who's writing their report and sees the person walk out of jail an hour and a half later, knowing that really we didn't solve anything. We didn't resolve anything. In fact, we've just created more cumbersome work in the process. Out of that 375,000 calls for service, Portland police made less than 5% arrests in those calls. So, that's not an arrest first mentality that we're talking about. But there is a role for law enforcement. I say all that, there is a role for law enforcement. There is a role for public safety in this conversation. I appreciate the congressman's leadership and the conversation being led to less about somebody said it better than I do, but less about the addiction or the health issue we're talking about. But there still is a crime public safety nexus that we do have to be concerned about. And people are calling us a lot on a regular basis about these challenges. And so my encouragement is that we not only are focusing on the criminal justice system, but I think we're missing the mark with the police. We're looking at less jails. You're not going to get an argument out of me about less jails, less jail space, less diversion opportunities, less addiction recovery. The Police Bureau has programs. We spend out of the Police Bureau budget millions of dollars around the service coordination team. We have officers dedicated to LEAD. I created a two-person homeless outreach team at Central Precinct, two police officers who spend their entire day doing homeless outreach work. We had 125 people in Central Precinct get into housing in the past year. According to Cascadia Behavioral Health, over 75% of them are still in housing. We have partnerships all across this city with many, many outreach providers and have a service-first attitude around these behavior problems that we get called to. A person standing on a street corner screaming in downtown. It's not illegal to stand on a street corner and scream downtown. Yeah, we have to send two officers there because of the way that the system's designed. And they get there, and now they're faced with, people upset about this, but behavior that's not necessarily illegal. We run to many, many, many of these. And another point that Congressman made, if we can get a handle on some of this, shudder to say we either need less police or maybe the police could be focusing on some of the more significant public safety challenges of the day. So you're not going to get an argument out of me tonight in terms of whether or not we should be going to the, whether or not, this is where the arena the police are in, should be in. I don't think they are, but the reality is we are. And as a structure, as a system, I'm open to suggestions and idea about how the police can get out of that out of that business, out of that conversation. And you know, I look forward to your input. I'm encouraged and by the turnout. I'm going to share, it's a risk, but I'm going to share on a personal note, Congressman. I want to thank you for your advocacy. It was 2 years ago this month that we lost our son to Ewing sarcoma. He was 15 years old. It's a horrible cancer that he fought bravely for 6 years. We went all over this country seeking treatment. Some of the best doctors in America, in Houston and Dallas, and of course, Dornbecker's, et cetera. And it, late into his battle in 2016, my lovely bride, who was a passionate advocate for our boy, finally had the courage to come to me and tell me she'd been thinking about medical marijuana as an option for Sam. And I couldn't help but be stunned at the irony of 20 some odd years of law enforcement. And now my bride is standing in front of me saying, I think this is an option for our son. And how tirelessly she worked to research, to understand, and really was forced to go out of state and speak with people in California and other places that were more progressive along this conversation. And I'm thinking, the irony here is amazing, right? I mean, yeah, I actually, you know, met with the city attorney, like, can I even do this? Can we even have this conversation? She's talking about, you know, going to California, bringing drugs up. I'm like, that is way across the line. But, you know, she figured it out. And we went through the system, and her and Sam got a medical marijuana card. And, you know, we had all these ATM debit purchases around the city where, you know, $100 here, $120. She learned the system. She learned how to have the conversations. I am losing my mind. At the same time, it doesn't make any difference because I'm faced with this stark reality. Unfortunately, you know, because of dosage requirements, I mean, we did use cannabis in, you know, the final stages of Sam's treatment. But I am a firm believer that in my lifetime, I hope that we move forward and see the benefit of that for our patients today. I think that because of the treatment, of the attitude towards that, towards cannabis over the many, many years in this country, we are behind. And, you know, to this day, we have very few regrets, and other than losing our son, of course, but one of the regrets is we didn't maybe start in that conversation earlier, that we explored diet, and once again, we saw great physicians all over the naturopaths, et cetera, but that's an area where we believe we wish we would have started earlier and maybe had created more hope and more opportunity. And we also wish that in spite of our phenomenal medical system and the amazing support we had, that there would have been more medical professionals willing to step up and say, hey, this is something maybe you should have thought about at an earlier time. So thank you for your advocacy in that. And, you know, you're going to have a supporter in me down the road if you want to have that conversation on a broader scale. So thank you.
That was Portland Police Bureau Deputy Police Chief Robert Day. After the forum ended, I asked Chief Robert Day a couple of questions.
The question, I guess, is now LEAD, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion. It's an excellent program, but currently there are only 15 officers who are actually part of LEAD, at least according to Central City Concerns' Karen Kern. In fact, I talked to Karen and Deborah Cafori just a few weeks ago about it. How can we get more officers involved in the in that program? What can we do to convince those people at City Hall and the rest of the, and the public for that matter, to support expanding that program?
Right. And that really is just a capacity issue. You know, it's about resource allocation. And so, you know, LEAD, we've been doing it now for a year or two. I can't remember exactly, maybe 2 years. And so what I'd want to do is go back, look at the numbers and the results. And then, you know, if we can show that it's having that impact that we believe it is, then I think there's opportunity for expansion, you know, outside of the downtown core. It's really primarily been folks downtown and, you know, and a little bit over in Northeast. So the idea of trying to take that broader, it is also a little bit challenging because although the populations are the same, you know, the encounters can be kind of different than like East County versus Old Town or something like that. So In the downtown core, for example, we have officers that are, it's easier to get around and they're kind of more concentrated. You start getting out into East County or you start getting into Northeast and St. John's, it's more spread out. So that's also a challenge in terms of, you know, getting the right amount of people in place to be able to address it and still take calls for service. But I'm certainly open to that conversation.
And as I was talking with Chair Kafoury, it's not just a culture change within law enforcement to look at arrest as a last resort. It's also about changing the culture of our neighbors out there who seem to want to call the police, call 911 whenever someone offends them by their presence. You know,
right.
You handle it. You know, get,
right.
You know, and it's just, how on earth do we change some of the attitudes of people here to stop relying on law enforcement for just dealing with people who are offending them by their very presence?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Well, we have to continue to do an education campaign, you know, and really make people aware of other resources that are available to them. I'm never going to fault somebody for calling 911. I understand the frustration. I understand the difficulty that they're faced with. But I think if we can do a better job of educating and, you know, both from a law enforcement perspective, but also as a community-wide effort to try and make sure people know that doesn't have to be your first call. And then, you know, challenging our civic leaders, both in the county and the city and the state, to provide those resources so they do have options other than us.
That was Portland Police Bureau Deputy Police Chief Robert Day. He had spoken at a public community forum on August 1st. It was organized by Congressman Earl Blumenauer and was on the topic of ending the war on drugs. Well, and for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. I'm Doug McVeigh, and you've been listening to Prison Pipeline. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give its page a like and share it with friends. A heartfelt thank you to our engineers Danielle Parks and Mike Fataklis. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for joining us. You make it all worth it. Join us next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!
Sometimes I find myself alone, regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard.